Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
And on today's Digging in Dirt, my guest is Chip Osborne. He's president of Osborne Organics. Chip has over 10 years' experience in creating safe, sustainable, and healthy athletic fields and landscapes through natural turf management, and he has 35 years' experience as a professional horticulturist. As a wholesale and retail nurseryman, he has firsthand experience with pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides routinely used in landscape and horticultural industry. Personal experience led him to believe there must be a safer way to grow plants, so Chip is now a board member of Beyond Pesticides, whose president, Jay Feldman, is a regular guest here at Digging in the Dirt, and Chip has recently founded the Organic Landscape Association, which I will be asking him about today. So welcome, Chip.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've been hoping this day would happen at some point because your reputation precedes you, and you're always hunted down for your expertise, and we'd like to have some of that here today on Digging in the Dirt.
Sounds great.
So why don't you tell the audience what led you to becoming one of the experts in organic commercial landscaping practices today? Was there some one thing that brought you to change to organic practices?
There was, more or less. I've been doing this now for almost 20 years. Actually, it is 20 years this year. As a commercial nurseryman, I used all kinds of synthetic materials, both fertilizers and pesticides. And a series of things happened that began to open my eyes that these were really not all that they were cracked up to be for safety reasons. And in 1997, I began to move away in my commercial operation, which was greenhouse production, and then move into turf and landscape with the idea that we could all learn to manage these outdoor spaces with a lot less chemicals than we've been taught over the last 50 or 60 years.
You know, I've had a lot of guests here. I think we've done, this is my fifth program about lawns because I feel they're really one of the things we can change in our lives for the better. And it's, I want to ask you about what have you learned is one of the most problematic things about the suburban lawn? You know, give me an idea of the breadth of toxicity going into the lawns these days.
In a typical lawn program, it is a very synthetic approach. Materials that are used were developed during and shortly after World War II. A typical lawn care service provider will do 3, 4, or 5 chemical-based fertilizer applications a year, which potentially can have an issue for runoff into saltwater, freshwater bodies, get into groundwater. And then the series of pesticide applications, those applications that go down to prevent crabgrass, and then those other applications that go down 2 or 3 times a year on weeds that are existing in the lawn. So when you take a step back and look at it, the average American lawn that is under a lawn care program is getting anywhere from 6 to 8 or possibly 9 synthetic applications a year.
I understand it's like millions and millions of pounds of chemicals going on American lawns every year.
Yeah, and that's just the millions of pounds of just the active ingredient, which is usually a small portion of the bag, box, or bottle. But yes, the American homeowners use more pesticides collectively to grow lawns than all of commercial agriculture combined.
Wow. So I have some neighbors who tell me, oh, yeah, I've been organic for years. And, knowing what I know, I'm kind of suspicious, you know. So I ask them a few questions, and then all of a sudden, you know, you see the little yellow flags popping up warning you that keep your children and pets off the lawns for a while, maybe a day or so, which is not enough in my opinion. But it's also not obviously not organic, but they think it is. I mean, there seems to be a lot of collusion out there or, you know, confusion and maybe some outright deception and fraudulent activity with landscape people. I mean, do you find that's the case? And, you know, what should a consumer be asking if he's getting what he's paying for?
Well, you're exactly right, and that happens all the time. You know, anything technically with a carbon compound in it can be called organic. So, you know, petroleum, carbon compound. So we, you know, end up that. So really kind of stretching the definition there. What we're talking about is natural organic or materials that are found, you know, naturally in nature. We are very concerned in the industry because there is a lot of greenwashing. There's a lot of money at stake. Very often programs are presented to homeowners under the guise of being organic or maybe partially organic. I'm dealing with a project now on the West Coast where a company claims to be 51% organic, but the other 49% is really some bad stuff. So, yes, a homeowner needs to be very careful on what they do or what kind of service providers. And, you know, they should always ask a contractor for a specimen label. That's something that every company needs to carry in their truck all the time and provide to the homeowner on request. So prior to investing any money with a company, you should really ask for the labels to see what kind of products they will be putting down and billing you for.
But some of these products have things in them that I'm pretty knowledgeable about this kind of stuff. And if I talked to a landscaper, I wouldn't know what half the stuff was that was in these products. How do you do this?
And that's where we're trying to sort of ramp up the level of education, or maybe let's say awareness, with people so that they can begin to understand that. That's one thing that the Organic Landscape Association will do in time, will be that sort of that clearinghouse for what is and what is not organic. And yeah, it really is one of those things that the average homeowner can't always tell, but, if you are getting a long chemical name, on a label, you can be pretty sure that it's probably not organic. Words that are on organic fertilizers and pesticides are usually short and sweet and to the point and relatively simple, as opposed to the long, complex chemical names.
And organic is completely different. It's basically buying into a system. Isn't that correct?
You're exactly right. And boy, it's great to hear you say that, because that is the real heart and soul of it. If we really try to approach organic land care as a product swap out, we will fail every time. And that means like taking and putting aside a chemical-based fertilizer and switching to an organic one, or putting aside a synthetic pesticide and moving into a natural one. And there certainly are a number of natural-based pesticides that we do fall back on, but it really is not that product swap out. It is approaching the landscape as a horticultural system, as a living system. And the most important aspect of that system that deserves our focus initially is the soil. So I always tell folks that when you begin to think about an organic program, yes, we certainly focus on what we can see, which is the grass or the plant, the flower, the vegetable, or the tree, but the most important focus should be on what we don't see, and that is the root of the plant and then those microscopic organisms down there that nature put there to facilitate the growth of plant material. So an organic approach to be successful fundamentally needs to have its origins in the biological life of the soil.
We talk about the soil here a lot. Almost all programs mention soil biology and what's going on under there. So why don't you tell people, you know, a chemical lawn, one that's not being done in an organic process. I've heard that it's very compacted soil. It doesn't have much life in there because it's been killed by pesticides. The pesticides also kill the biology in the soil besides the other stuff that they don't want. Is that correct?
That is correct to some degree. Yes, insecticides, fungicides will take out those beneficial organisms. And you know, interestingly enough, the typical four-step type fertilizer that people purchase is synthetic, and it is basically a bag of salt. Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium are all mineral salts. And synthetic fertilizers basically deliver their nutrition as mineral salt. So as we know, salt is not conducive to supporting living organisms. So the repeated use of synthetic water-soluble fertilizers and then those pesticides does seriously diminish the microbial biomass in the soil. Without a good biomass, then a lot of negative things begin to happen. Thatch in the lawn builds up, and that fosters insects and diseases. Compaction increases because it is the soil biological life that keeps soil loose and friable. So that as you get more and more into a synthetic program, the soil quality overall begins to deteriorate, and that makes our job that much harder. Conventional industry, meaning conventional fertilizers and pesticides, really don't acknowledge the concept of soil biological life because it's not needed for those products to work. But for all of the things that we use in natural or organic management, the biological life is critical to its success.
So give us an example of what's different about going organic. I mean, is it a transition process? Do you have to put up with more weeds? Do you have to put up with more undesirable things as far as, you know, the look of suburbia? I mean, that's almost everybody wants that perfect lawn. And is organic harder to get that perfect lawn?
Not harder to get, but there is some time involved. Yes, there is a transition period. The synthetic products are quick fix, instant gratification, and organic is, as you mentioned, a systems-based approach, and it takes some time to get that system all working the way we want it to. It is absolutely possible to get that lawn that folks want, and that, you know, that's sort of the benchmark of that really nice front lawn or reasonable expanse of grass around a residential property. We talk about weed thresholds and what should someone, you know, expect. Well, the weed threshold that we talk about in organic is less than 5% weed pressure per acre, which is pretty small. In fact, a municipality that that hires out for chemical treatment for weeds of, say, municipal parks and sports fields usually has that number in the contract, 5% weed tolerance. Before they would call the company back and make them respray. So that's a number the conventional industry uses, and that's one in the organic industry that we use as well. And I really think that if you're looking at less than 5% weed over an acre, that should satisfy most high expectations and make for a suitable lawn. So it is possible to have a good quality lawn when you reduce and eliminate synthetic products. It's not necessarily going to get worse before it gets better. If we start with a good lawn and we begin to transition it, focusing on soil, focusing on biological life, focusing on nitrogen for the grass plant, we expect to move seamlessly into an organic program. That transition may take a year or a year and a half, but once complete, we do not expect to see a recurrence of weed pressures or, you know, sort of an onslaught of insect problems to cause us, cause us headaches.
Well, you know, most people don't do their own lawns. I mean, so let's do two things. Let's do one first. The first one is, what if you want to be a do-it-yourselfer? What do you suggest somebody do first?
First thing, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, would be to take a soil test, send that off, and that will tell us exactly what we need. We need to first balance the soil, adjust the pH, understand exactly what is there, and the laboratory will tell you what, if any, corrective measures need to be taken. Then we determine what our expectations are. Do we have really high expectations, modest expectations, or maybe even a little bit less than modest, which is all really acceptable. It really is what the individual wants to see. And that's when we set our fertilizer program. Typically here in the Northeast, we're fertilizing in the spring and the fall and not in the summer. So April and June are good fertility months for the homeowner to put something down, as is the middle of August and the end of September. And then overseeding, a homeowner, we generally recommend in the first year or two to just put some extra grass seed out there, thicken the lawn a little bit. If there's a bare spot the size of a silver dollar or greater, nature will put a weed there. Between fertility and overseeding, and then it's not the easiest thing for a homeowner to do, but would be to aerate the lawn. That's much easier for a general for a landscape contractor to do. But the homeowner, if they're really determined, can, you know, go to one of the big box stores and rent an aerator and run that across the lawn, and that introduces oxygen, which helps to support and build the whole system.
Mm-hmm. So now, before we go to landscapers, you can't just learn this by going onto the internet. Where can a homeowner go to get some information about how to do organic lawns for himself?
Most regions of the country now are offering organic lawn care classes, where some are being done through cooperative extension, others through private nonprofits, where we're, you know, teaching and instructing homeowners in natural methods and in lecture format, you know, trying to deliver this information. And then more and more is popping up online, at least from extension services, and beginning to talk about organic and chemical-free, because the demand is now there to move in this direction.
Mm-hmm. So now, let's say you're a busy homeowner, you got your own job, you don't need to do landscaping. Where do we find an organic landscaping company? And I'm assuming that most of them are pretty conventional. I mean, but I'm also assuming that you're forming the Organic Landscapers Association because more and more organic landscapers are popping up, and you want to organize all this stuff.
That is correct. We are very fortunate here in the Northeast that the Northeast Organic Farming Association in Connecticut, so Connecticut, NOFA, 18 years ago started the Organic Land Care Accreditation Program, where professional landscape companies attend a four-day course. It's an intensive in organic landscape management. The website is organiclandcare.net, and on that website is a searchable database of everyone that has taken that course. And we have quite a number of practitioners in New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. And then in addition to that, companies like mine travel the country teaching professional seminars for service providers, for those landscape contractors, to bring them up to speed on natural methods. And we eventually, within the year, the Organic Landscape Association will be the online home for sort of the definitive education in organic management of the landscape.
You're listening to the president of Osborne Organics and the founder of the Organic Landscape Association, Chip Osborne, and he is a font of information about this subject that we're talking about today. So if there are landscapers out there listening right now, this is a two-prong event here. We want consumers to put pressures on their landscapers to become organic landscapers, and we want conventional landscapers to become organic landscapers. So if you're out there listening one way or the other, you can start working at it by asking your landscaper what is he, and then he may want to go look for his organic certification. If a landscaper is listening for that, what do you tell him to do?
If a landscaper is listening, I would tell them to the three things that they can do. They could contact Connecticut NOFA and inquire about the organic land care program. They at organiclandcare.net, and there is a schedule there of classes coming up in 2017 and 2018. My company, Osborne Organics, does two-day intensive turf training. We will be in Massachusetts, New Jersey, and out on Long Island this year, late 2017-2018. And then I would really encourage them to visit the Organic Landscape Association website, and we'll begin to see the development of the content that will be available there in 6 or 8 months that will really bring all of this education together in one place.
Are you going to have sort of like an OMRI label, like an OLA label, so that people know easily that they're dealing with a company that's verifiably organic?
Yes, we are. Very interesting that you asked that. And that is one of our goals, is that right now with OMRI, Organic Materials Review Institute, which is developed for agriculture and land care and landscape, takes the lead from agriculture, but there are lots of products that are used in land care that are not used in agriculture. So the OLA will eventually be home to an OMRI-type process where product is reviewed and simplified and full explanations and seal of approval for both landscape contractors at the professional level and for homeowners at the residential level.
One thing I noticed with some of the organic landscaping companies that I know of, they are getting business from schools and public spaces because they're heavily regulated and they have certain kinds of regime for their space, their grasses and stuff that only an organic landscaper can provide. How does a landscaping company prepare for that kind of business with a municipality? That should be a very good business for certain people.
It absolutely is. I have a colleague that works in New Jersey and specializing in school districts and municipalities with an organic approach, and his business is just skyrocketing and taking off, and he can't even keep up with the demand. It's a great market opportunity for those larger landscape companies that have the wherewithal to invest in capital equipment and do things on a large scale. Municipalities and school districts all around the country. I work in probably 25 states right now with organic programs on public spaces, and the demand for that is increasing rapidly. And probably the hardest thing I have right now is to find those companies around the country that are large enough, that have the desire to reach out, get the education, and then provide these services. I know firsthand that municipalities and school districts are beginning to look in this direction very, very strongly.
So how does a municipality, let's assume that it's somebody who is in charge of parks or in charge of school baseball fields, hasn't made the transition, I find it kind of hard to believe that they haven't started making that decision already. But what is it that these decision makers have to do to start making sure that their stuff is up to snuff?
They really need to know internally, you know, what is going down on those spaces where children play. I can honestly tell you there are more municipalities and school districts that are strongly adhering to the conventional approach as opposed to embracing the organic alternative approaches. But that is changing monthly at this point in time. The request for me to travel around the country and help facilitate some of these transitions is just growing all the time. So that's an indication that there is some awareness being raised, and it usually happens not internally within the hierarchy of the school district or the municipality, but it's usually a concerned parent that raises the question about what actually is going down on those spaces where their children play, and that leads to greater discussion and, you know, hopefully then into an interest in changing practices.
I can't believe that there's still a lot of them that are doing conventional stuff when there's when children and animals are concerned. That's really amazing. But further your point, the parents, in other words, can lay a lot of pressure on the administrators or the people who are in charge of these schools. I mean, you should, parents who are listening should go and ask their schools, are you using organic practices or are you still using conventional practices? Because canine cancers, for instance, are up, children's cancers are up who are playing a lot of soccer or lacrosse and stuff. And you should be asking these questions. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right. And, you know, in a nutshell with the pesticide discussion is that all the pesticides and what a lot of times is that those people that are using them or those school districts say, well, it's EPA registered and it has an EPA label on it. And if it wasn't safe, then we wouldn't be able to use it. But we have to remember that those products are all evaluated under a 1972 law that talks about risk assessment and risk versus benefit. And it talks about lethal doses of these materials. In other words, exposing laboratory animals to increasingly strong doses till they find the lethal dose. We're not talking about lethal doses anymore. We're talking about sublethal doses where very, very minute exposures multiple times in a developing child can have a lifetime impact, even passing out to successive generations. So new science, new research, but we still have an antiquated way that we evaluate these products at the U.S. EPA.
And the U.S. EPA has changed from the Environmental Protection Agency to I don't know what these days under Mr. Pruitt. Do you have any comments about his practices?
Oh, my word. One of the first things he did was to put chlorpyrifos back on the market, a product that had been restricted and being phased out because of its danger, and now it is back in agriculture and ready to be used. All for the one reason that it has the ability to increase corporate profit. So, there's a lot of changes that are happening. I'm going down to Washington in a couple of weeks, and we'll be meeting with the EPA. I have the opportunity as a board member of Beyond Pesticides to actually go in and sit down and talk with the folks at the EPA about what's going on and how we can begin to move, you know, in a different direction. But currently the last 6 or 8 months has been pretty concerning with some of the lax lifting of restrictions and putting things back on the market that science has said are pretty bad.
Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. It's not kind of, it's really disturbing. We're listening to Chip Osborne. He's president of Osborne Organics and founder of the Organic Landscape Association. And as he just mentioned, I don't know if people understood what he was talking about. It's Beyond Pesticides is the board that he's a member of. And they're a great organization with a lot of information online. You can go to beyondpesticides.org. And Jay Feldman and Chip are always speaking in front of government organizations, schools, parks, you name it. These guys get around and are doing a really good service for all of us out there by having us, you know, leave the chemical error. And I spell that E-R-R-O-R. I'm Kevin Gallagher, and this is Digging in the Dirt. Chip, what else do you want to say before I let you go here?
Well, just a little bit more about the Organic Landscape Association, in that we are a very fragmented industry. We don't have the resources that the conventional industry does. And this is now the culmination of 5 or 6 years worth of work to try to unify the industry. And a very interesting thing, and it may interest some of your listeners, is that the Organic Landscape Association, it has been developed to be a trade association to unify the organic industry, meaning product developers and suppliers, distributors, practitioners. But we also have a membership category for the advocacy community. Those moms and dads around the country that think that there should be a better way, that think the way, you know, you just spoke, that, you know, we have to be able to move on and create a safer environment. So we're looking to bring those folks to the table and educate them and provide them a forum or a voice where, instead of just a few people isolated around the country, we can collectively bring this discussion together to try to move it that much faster. So no one has ever really reached out to the advocacy community before and included them within this industry. But, you know, they are the one, you said it at the beginning of this half hour, that, you know, call your landscaper, request organic methods, advocate for it, call your school district. And those folks are the ones at the grassroots level that will end up changing the marketplace and move us to a safer and more and a more friendly management plan for the landscape.
You know, folks, what he's saying is really true. We always say here, vote with your dollars. You know, you want more organic products, buy organic products. Don't buy the crap. And if you also want organic practices, or you don't even know, you should ask about, are the things going on at my child's school being done correctly? Am I exposing my child to things I don't want them to be exposed to? Chip, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it. Once again, Chip Osborne of Osborne Organics, and he's the founder of the Organic Landscape Association, which is at
theola.org.
OLA.org. You can find some information out there. And you also can find a lot of information at beyondpesticides.org. Chip, thank you so much for coming aboard.
Thank you.
And good luck with all your efforts.
Thanks very much.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.